From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is a special pledge drive episode of Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Even though we're a pretty small newsroom, we're not afraid to tackle the big issues of the day. And this past year, our team was busy diving into stories about migrant families separated at the border, the white supremacist movement, and how big tech companies are spying on us. Today, we'd like to bring you some highlights. We start with Laura Morrell. She covers immigration, and earlier this year, she found herself in a neighborhood in Philadelphia. Out on the street, a wood chipper churns through freshly cut branches. Laura stands nearby in an empty lot between two brick buildings. She's here to meet a man named Wilson.
Wilson?
Uh-huh.
Right up there?
Oh, up there?
Yeah.
He's harnessed to a trunk of a tree 20 feet up. Bit by bit, he slices off big sections of tree trunk, sending them thudding to the ground. Wilson is in his early 40s. We're not using his full name because he's concerned for his safety. We'll tell you more about that in a little bit. He's been climbing and cutting trees for the last 13 years. Once on the ground, he reaches out a gloved hand to Laura, who asks, how's he doing?
¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien. Congelado, pero bien.
Freezing but good, Wilson tells her. It's 30 degrees out, not the kind of weather Wilson grew up with back in Guatemala. Wilson is the only one on his crew trained to climb trees. On his harness, he has metal hooks, rope, and a chainsaw. Laura asks how much it all weighs.
¿Cuánto pesa todo el equipo?
Como 50 libras. Mam, yo estoy un poco gordito.
Around 50 pounds, he says, and then jokes that he's a little heavy himself. Laura is here to learn about something that happened to Wilson a little over 2 years ago. Wilson was trimming trees on a day like this when he got a phone call that would change his life, dragging him into a system he had successfully avoided for nearly 2 decades. Here's Laura.
There are 2 phone calls in this story. Wilson got the first one in 2016. This call should have been great news. The voice on the other end of the line asked Wilson 2 questions. One, did he have a daughter named Yancy, because a girl by that name had just crossed the border into the U.S.? And 2, would he be willing to sponsor her, in essence house her and care for her, while she went through the immigration process? His answer?
Sí.
An immediate yes to both questions. The person on the phone was from the Office of Refugee Resettlement, also known as ORR. It's a federal agency with a pretty self-explanatory name, resettling refugees, including unaccompanied minors, kids like Yancy, who crossed the border alone. ORR runs shelters like the one Yancy was being held at in Texas. And the agency also finds sponsors, parents or family members who can give these kids a home while they go to immigration court. That's what that first phone call was all about.
Simplemente pensé en ayudar a mi hija porque estaba detenida ahí. Y yo como papá, pues rápido yo me movilicé a mandar papeles, a firmar papeles, a mandar mi información y todo.
Wilson says the only thing on his mind was helping his 17-year-old daughter. He rushed to put together the sponsorship paperwork to bring her home. It was going to be the first time he'd see Yancy in 15 years. When Yancy was a baby, Wilson and Yancy's mom were living together in Guatemala. Wilson had trained for years to become a skilled mechanic and had just opened his own business. But that business soon caused trouble for Wilson.
He left because he had to.
This is Wilson's lawyer, Justin Mixon. He says a cartel targeted Wilson because of his technical skills. They wanted him to work for them.
He had just started a new business, and then he was told, like, either, you know, this business is part of our drug trafficking operation, or we kill you. And then they started following him, and no, they were gonna kill him. He knew that. That's why he left.
Wilson fled to the U.S., leaving behind his wife and baby daughter. He says back then, he didn't know about U.S. immigration law, didn't know he could apply for asylum. A couple of years after arriving in the U.S., Wilson and his wife split up, and Yancy moved in with his sister. Wilson and Yancy stayed in touch over phone calls and text messages. While Yancy grew up in Guatemala, Wilson remarried, learned a new trade, and built a life in Philadelphia. And now he was getting a call that could bring his daughter back into his life. Even though Wilson has never had legal status in the U.S., he wasn't worried about sponsoring Yancy and sending his personal information to the government. He says he knew ORR was separate from ICE and that their job is to help kids like Yancy. About 20 years ago, Congress directed the agency to find homes for migrant children and to act in the child's best interest. It does not enforce immigration laws. ORR did take care of Yancy for weeks while Wilson put all the paperwork together. Yancy remembers during that time, she looked forward to Mondays. That's when she got a weekly 10-minute phone call with her dad. She says the minutes always seemed to fly by.
Imagínese, tanto tiempo sin hablar, y yo me sentía como sola, y él me decía que tuviera paciencia, que todo iba a estar bien.
Yancy tells me, imagine, I was there for so long, feeling so lonely, and he would tell me to be patient, that everything would work out. And it did, for a while anyway. After 3 months of back and forth, ORR approved Wilson to sponsor Yancy. He was asked to pick her up at the Philadelphia airport to meet her at the gate. Going through the TSA checkpoint, Wilson remembers feeling nervous for the first time. Nervous because he was here without legal status. He felt vulnerable around so much security. But that fear quickly melted the moment he saw his daughter.
Porque yo no me podía ni creer. Cuando yo la vi, yo me sorprendí porque como es bien grande, no, toda una mujer y yo la dejé bebé en Guatemala.
Wilson says he was surprised when he first saw Yancy. She was a teenager, a young lady now, not the baby he'd last seen in Guatemala.
Como yo solo lo conocía por fotos. Obvio, es como una emoción bien inexplicable. Sabía que era mi papá y yo iba a estar bien con él. Me sentía más segura con él.
Yancy says she'd only known her father through photographs, and seeing him for the first time was indescribable. That being with him made her feel safe. Wilson and Yancy folded themselves into a new life together. Yancy started going to high school, learning English, and grew close to her younger siblings. Then, about a year later, Wilson gets that second call while he's out on the job.
Mi esposa fue la que llamó a mi jefe y le dijo que me andaban buscando unas personas en la casa y que quería hablar conmigo. Y era un agente de migración.
It was his wife. There were immigration agents at their house. Wilson's wife put one of them on the phone. The agents assured Wilson they just needed him to sign some important papers about Yancy. So Wilson rushed home, and before he could reach the front door, the agents surrounded him.
Bueno, me arrestaron, me pusieron un grillete. Y me llevaron para adentro de mi casa para que me despidiera de mi familia, que ellos me iban a llevar, me iban a deportar.
Wilson says they handcuffed him outside his house while his children were watching. He says the agents told him he was going to be deported and let him say goodbye to his family. After 20 years of living in the U.S., Wilson says he's been really careful to avoid trouble. He has no criminal record, and he tells me he's never called the police, even when he's needed help. All because he was trying to keep a low profile. But now, just a year after Yancy crossed the border, after he answered ORR's call to sponsor her, he got arrested.
Me asusté de una manera que no hallaba ni qué hacer, no hallaba ni qué pensar. Yo me asusté, me quedé, casi casi en shock.
Shocked, scared. Wilson says he didn't know what to say or think. After he was arrested, he was taken to an ICE holding cell where he says there were other undocumented parents just like him, parents who had also sponsored their children and were now facing deportation. If he gets sent back to Guatemala, Wilson tells me the cartel will come after him again.
O sea, usaron a los niños para agarrarlos a ellos igual que a mí.
They use the kids, he says, to get to parents like me.
So here's children being asked all these questions about their family.
Justin Mixon again, Wilson's lawyer.
Their parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents in the United States. And all that information can be used against those people. The kids don't understand because the kids think, oh, there's this really nice bilingual social worker who is really trying to help me. And they probably are, but that information that's being collected.
When Wilson was arrested in 2017, it was the first time our immigration reporters at Reveal had ever heard of sponsors being targeted like this. And since then, I found out that ICE was conducting a special operation during that time, one with a very long official-sounding name, the Human Smuggling Disruption Initiative. The goal was all about cracking down on networks that smuggle people across the border. ICE declined to provide the names of sponsors that were arrested, but confirmed that agents were working in Philadelphia in August 2017, the same month Wilson was detained. The operation lasted 3 months and targeted sponsors like Wilson. ICE accused them of smuggling, paying someone to bring kids into the U.S. More than 400 people were arrested. Wilson insists that before ORR called him, he had no idea Yancy was coming, much less paid anyone to bring her across the border. I've spoken to several immigration lawyers representing sponsors like Wilson. They told me their clients had nothing to do with smuggling. If this operation was really about smuggling, how successful was it? I teamed up with another reporter at Reveal, Patrick Michaels, to try to find out how many sponsors were actually caught hiring smugglers. Together, we sifted through hundreds of court records.
Southern District of Texas, 340 cases.
Middle District of Tennessee, one case.
Western District of Tennessee, zero cases.
Southern District of California, 511 cases.
Western District
Over the course of a few weeks, Patrick and I searched a federal court database, digging through smuggling cases in every U.S. court district, 94 in total. We were looking for cases prosecuted in the 7 months during and after this initiative.
Western District of Kentucky, zero cases.
Central District of California,
Central District of Illinois, zero cases. Western District of Kentucky, zero cases.
Zero cases.
We found only three prosecutions for smuggling. That's three people charged with bringing kids across the border, three out of more than 400 who were arrested. Those numbers suggest that ICE's operation wasn't about catching smugglers, that in practice anyway, it was about catching people like Wilson by using their kids as bait. We reached out to ICE about this, but the agency declined to talk to us. A spokesperson from the Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees ORR, wouldn't respond to our questions about the initiative. But in a statement, they said their goal is to create a safe and healthy environment for unaccompanied minors. This special operation ended in 2017, but it paved the way for a more permanent policy.
So with that, I'll turn it over to, Devin from DOJ.
We're going to let Steve go first from HHS.
In a briefing to journalists from May of last year, officials from the Trump administration discussed immigration policy, including a brand new memorandum of agreement.
I'll just say a quick word about the memorandum of agreement that was concluded between the Department of Health and Human Services and Homeland Security. We think this is
That's Stephen Wagner, an assistant secretary at HHS. Under this new agreement, ORR started sharing information about sponsors with ICE.
The other thing is we're going to more thoroughly vet sponsors. I think we do an excellent job now, but with DHS's cooperation, we will conduct a fingerprint-based background check on every sponsor to further...
By the end of last year, ICE arrested nearly 200 people. Many were sponsors like Wilson. His lawyer, Justin, says now that sponsors are being targeted, they're reluctant to cooperate with ORR, and that has dire consequences for kids being held inside the shelter system.
If you mess with that system, if you threaten the parents or the family members that by helping a child, you yourself are going to be at risk, then, of course, what happens? Then the shelter population explodes, which is what we've seen in the last year and a half.
There were nearly 15,000 kids in ORR custody by the end of last year, an all-time record. Nearly all were unaccompanied minors.
Ellos no piensan en los daños que hacen a la familia.
Wilson says immigration officials don't think about the harm they cause families. He doesn't understand why they would release his daughter to him and arrest him a year later, knowing that she relies on him for food, shelter, transportation, everything.
¿Cómo se quedan los niños? O sea, ¿cómo se queda la familia? Mal. ¿Cómo van a vivir? ¿Quién va a pagar la renta? ¿Quién va a pagar los biles? ¿Cómo van a ir a la escuela?
What happens to the kids? Wilson asks. What about the family? He says they're left in a bad situation. Who's going to pay the bills, the rent? Who will take the kids to school? I ask him what he would have done if he'd known helping his daughter would put him at risk for deportation. He tells me he would have tried to find a relative with legal status to sponsor her. But if that didn't work...
Como papá, lo hubiera tenido que hacer. Porque obvio ahí no le iba a dejar. Porque eso será imposible. Entonces... no sé qué hubiera pasado si ella se pudiera haber quedado ahí sola. Abandonada por un papá, no hubiera corrido el riesgo como quiera.
As a father, Wilson says he'd do the same thing all over again. Leaving Yancy at a shelter in Texas, leaving her there alone, abandoned, it wasn't an option. He says if faced with the same choice again, he'd take the risk, no matter what.
Wilson is challenging his deportation. He's living at home with his family in Philadelphia and continuing to work as a tree trimmer. An immigration judge is expected to make a ruling in his case in September. Laura Morrell's story was produced by Jenny Casas with reporting help from Patrick Michaels. If this kind of in-depth journalism is important to you, you can help make it happen by supporting this public radio station. Here's how.